The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
I don't want to mispronounce your name. Is it Emwale or...
That's correct.
I got it right. Emwale Henry. Yes, good morning to you and welcome to our show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It's nice to have you with
us. Good morning to you. To your listeners as well.
It's nice to have you with us here this morning, but let's get a bit of context before we get into our interview so that people can have a greater appreciation and understanding for your perspective. Tell us a bit about yourself and some of the things that you're involved in.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, my name is Emwale, as rightfully pronounced on your first try, so credit to you. So I'm a management consultant and poster based in Atlanta, Georgia. My area is focused on business intelligence and really supporting clients and decision makers to take data-driven decisions and having a sober view of political environment. So not picking sides, but being able to navigate present political environments to make best-based decisions.
I was told that you were at the inauguration.
Yes, I had the opportunity to be a part of a congressional delegation. And needless to say, very, very cool, Washington, D.C., but definitely a very unique perspective of what's unfolding in the U.S. And I see a lot of crosswinds and also opportunities for the region, and Trinidad specifically.
Donald Trump's ascension to power for a second time is quite a feat because he had a number of challenges, political challenges, legal challenges, personal challenges, you name it, Donald Trump faced it. He was able to get over all of those and convince the American voting population that he was the best man for the job and that he represented the best party to take America wherever he thought America, wherever he thinks America needs to be taken. And he has made it abundantly clear in some of his initial comments that he has hit the ground running. Even before he was appointed, there are a lot of things that he wanted to put in place. Those have already come in place. And let's start with, what is the mood in America at this point in time? Normally when you have elections and you have the swearing-in, because the swearing-in took place a long time after the election, there was a long period in between. Are tensions still high? Have people accepted the results? Are Americans moving on? What's going on?
Well, I would say the last two, you know, there's acceptance. People have moved on. And there's caution. For those who would not have voted for him, there's cautious pessimism, right? Let's see what he does in the second term. And for those who would have voted for him, there's high optimism. Because when you look at the economy, the Biden administration, you know, high inflation, high immigration rates, et cetera, Donald Trump was able to attract a multi-coalition to his credit. And moreover, he was able to bring forward a 35-point swing of young voters. This is from Romney in the minus to now Donald Trump, a plus 35% swing in the polls. So there is high optimism. And that optimism is really surrounded around his ability to attract a diverse team. So when you look at the likes of Elon Musk to Tulsi Gabbard, a former Democratic leader, you see the diversity of opinions being at the table. I think there's a lot of optimism to see a shake in the system, and that's where that momentum swing is taking into this new administration.
I remember looking at a video done by Dave Chappelle on Donald Trump in his first incarnation. And Dave Chappelle referenced a debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton as the reason why Dave Chappelle, as a black American, supported Donald Trump. And they were talking about tax evasion and the tax code and tax structure. And in the interview, Donald Trump said to Hillary Clinton that he understands the tax regime better than anyone in the U.S. because he uses it to its advantage. And all of the donors that support Hillary Clinton do the same thing. And that is why the Hillary Clinton administration has not touched the tax code, because it benefits certain people. And Dave Chappelle said that he thought that to be the most honest statement of anyone seeking to gain political office. Admitting that they use a system that's not flawed, and admitting that others use it as well, because political parties allow this thing to continue. And Dave Chappelle said that a star was born in his mind, and he didn't see race, even though people have, in the election, race was a big factor. And it was interesting, the numbers that turned out to support Donald Trump when it came to race as well. And all of those things, Donald Trump was able to confront some of the most difficult issues, LGBTQ, the race relations, number one, and of course, immigration, number two. Mm-hmm. Because immigration is a big deal. The Biden administration hinged a lot of their campaign on immigration, on allowing some of these policies to continue. And Donald Trump said basically no. So the American population showed in no uncertain terms that they weren't necessarily pleased with some of the things that were going on, despite the narrative in the public domain. Now that he has assumed office, one of the first things that he has done is to crack down on illegal immigration. Now, we're hearing about millions of people who stand to be affected negatively one way or the other. What's the sentiment on the ground? Are people really expecting this mass deportation to take place? Is it just politics? What's happening?
You know, to your original point, you know, when you examine Donald Trump's past honesty, you know, it reminds me of a saying, you know, what you disdain, you don't examine. And David Chappelle, as a comedian, he was able to be intellectually, you know, curious, or at least honest in identifying, you know, that peeling away of the layer in terms of how he examined the American society and the relationship between money and power and politics. Mm-hmm. So he and also he understood the difference between tax evasion and tax avoidance, right? And he was able to navigate what tax avoidance is, which is legal. So in his administration, I think why people would have given him that opportunity was not just him identifying the quote-unquote swamp of how people leverage the system, but how the common man can actually begin to see an improvement in their cost of living, being able to maintain cultural conservatism, because you said it, you know, within minutes of his 29-minute speech, he said it clearly that the federal government is not going to be interfering into the personal lives and the privacy of people's decisions. But the policy position of the federal government is its gender position is that of male and female. So he's unafraid of his clear Christian Judaism worldview, and he places that squarely in responding to the electorate. But to your key question about immigration, I think there's a lot of noise about that. If you look at the numbers, Obama would have had one of the highest levels of deportation under his administration, if you look at the numbers. So deportation, in terms of looking at illegal migration, is nothing new in terms of its U.S. system. I think what is new now is because of the high levels of illegal migration and his attempt to not only identify illegal migration as a breaking of the law, but he's also moving forward to identify the downwinds of illegal migration in terms of illegal cartels, human trafficking, identifying persons within that remit as and not only illegal activity, but a terrorist activity.
Mm.
So he's bringing to bear all of the military action there. And his focus, and this is where the alarmists have to be able to examine if their alarm is true, his initial focus is looking at criminals, known criminals who have criminal records, who have come into the country. His mass deportation exercise is a priority of national security to get them out of the system immediately.
Oh, okay. So persons who are deemed illegal in the United States. That category of people is wide-ranging, because you have some people, let's take Trinidad and Tobago, for instance. You have people who have left here. I was speaking to somebody just this morning about it. They know someone who's in the States for 30 years, and the person is illegal. The person has not, they've not done anything about their status to regularize their status. They continue to fly under the radar. So are all of these people susceptible to be deported? Is the net that wide?
Great question. So if you examine the act that Donald Trump would have referenced, the Alien Enemies Act of 1798.
Yes.
So his identification, if you read it yourself, you'll see, number one, he declares in that act, he declares a country that's an enemy of the state. That's number one. And number two, that they are a threat to the U.S. So when he identifies in his conversation Mexico and Venezuela, he's identifying the narco state and drug gangs that have impacted, you know, communities, you know, persons who have been killed from illegal migrants. And in that identification, he is addressing that terroristic threat from that perspective. Now, to your question about, you know, persons in our region who've overstayed their time and they are living in the U.S., there are current discussions of how do you transition persons who are part of the economy, who are contributors to the economy. How do you now, and this is an economic decision, how do you now transition them from that illegal status to now contribute to the economy through taxation? Because the agricultural sector is built up of a lot of illegal migrants who are in the farming sector.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have persons who are in various different sectors. And that conversation has already started in the Congress, whereby Congressman Byron Donalds, I believe his name is, from Miami, he would have indicated that there is internal discussions, how do you transition such persons? But the priority of the administration, which is in the millions, those who have committed crimes, those who are are known gang members, and those who are in the system, and they are what is called gotaways. So there's a concept in immigration law where ICE would have caught persons, and there was a process to regularize or identify them in the system. We would have done something very similar in Trinidad, where with migrants coming in from Venezuela. Remember the registration process?
Right.
That was a national security initiative. If you are here truly as an economic migrant, come out of the dark and register yourself. So there were two initiatives that took place. One, we know who's here, and then two, there's intelligence exchange between Trinidad and the Venezuelan government to know the status of these persons, if they had prior criminal records, etc. So the U.S. would have tried a system like that, and they would have registered millions of persons who did not want to be known by the state. Now, why would you not want to be known when you have the benefit? Hear this carefully. The benefits, especially in many of the sanctuary cities, the benefits of free hotel, right, food, you had persons who were getting money, etc. And yet still, millions of persons did not want to be identified. So that has become a priority for this administration, to find those persons. Law enforcement is now being empowered through their borders there to coordinate amongst the Justice Department of its law enforcement arms to identify these people and to deport them.
Yeah, this immigration, the approach to immigration by the U.S. Is one that across the world is being closely monitored, because immigration issues are affecting countries across the world. Europe, the EU, and all these other nations, you have very, very serious problems. You have migrants trying to get into these countries illegally. They're drowning, they're falling off a boat, all kind of nonsense taking place. You have, I think it's Poland that has stood up to the rest of the world. And I think the gentleman who speaks on behalf of Poland was a part of the Trump campaign. I think he spoke a couple of times as well, if I'm not mistaken, saying that Poland does not have one illegal immigrant. They're not going to take any. If you want to come into Poland, there's a way to do it. Follow the law and then you have no problem. And he went on to say that Poland actually took 1 million Ukrainians And as I said, it's a discussion across the world. Here at home, we have the same discussions. Right now, people saying the same thing Trump doing, we need to do. And I've heard people say that. They've been saying that they support the stance of Donald Trump. If you want to come into the country, there's a method to do it legally, and we won't have a problem. Mm-hmm. As to whether or not we'll see anybody taking that approach here at home, that's left to be said. But there are some other things as well that Donald Trump has spoken about that seems to rub people the wrong way. I've been saying on the program, I've been saying to people that Donald Trump, first and foremost, is a businessman. He's an entrepreneur. And he approaches things with not necessarily the political blinkers that others do. And that is going to see a different approach to issues that many people may not necessarily understand immediately or would agree with, because it challenges the status quo, because politicians weigh everything with the political value in mind. Donald Trump doesn't seem to have those issues. He's in business about the politics behind it. He's about getting the job done. And one of those is the U.S. and its foreign policy. Now, I remember in his first incarnations, him sitting with representatives of, I think it was the EU or some UN Security Council, Germany, I remember Angela Merkel being in the meeting and others, and Donald Trump saying to them, well, America paying too much money for international security. Why does America need to be paying that much when the others aren't pulling their weight? And you look at the on the faces of the people in that room, you could have cut them, you wouldn't get blood. And he has made the same pronouncement, the pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord and a number of other major decisions when it comes to international policy. Do you see these things actually coming to pass?
Yes. And I would say, you know, in his first iteration, he would have demonstrated having his own NATO allies. And when we say NATO allies, this is post-Bretton Woods systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of an alliance where if one is attacked, all are attacked. So they're in a military agreement. And he said plainly to his allies, I will leave if you don't pony up your 5% contribution. And immediately they began to pay up, right? And so what happens in the past is a good predictor of what's going to take place in the future. So he has withdrawn from his executive order from the World Health Organization. And he has indicated clearly that any type of relationship that does not benefit the U.S., he's withdrawing from it. Not just the Paris Accord Agreement, not just some of the trade relationships that is not beneficial to the U.S., his bluster concerning Canada, right? The imbalance of trade. Him jokingly stating to Justin Trudeau that you'll be the 51st. He calls him Governor Trudeau, right, who has found himself in the crosshairs of a cost of living crisis, etc. So I think his America First agenda is what he presents, which is a common sense approach. If it does not benefit the U.S., its bottom line, then the relationship has to be adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself tells me, you know, when he applies what I call the law of hanging fruits, no hanging fruits. When Trump enters the arena, I remember, it's so vivid, I remember, as he enters and he's signing all these agreements, executive orders, people were in not just chair or in awe of him taking action, but he was doing something most typical politicians don't do, that's keep their word.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately, all of the promises that he's made on the campaign trail, promise made, promise kept. He indicated that the J6, you know, insurrectionists or rioters, over 1,500 of them,
mm-hmm.
exonerated. You know, he made the clear indication of his social policy with regards to gender. Promise made, promise kept. And he's also examining the relationship with other nations. He even mentioned Venezuela from the Oval Office. He said, there's no need for us to buy oil from Venezuela anymore. We want to move into energy dominance.
Yeah.
So he's clearly rigorously moving in that direction. And truth be told, seldom politicians keep their word. And moreover, he's extending the shelf life of his honeymoon period by squarely keeping his promise.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. Whether or not they're related, Donald Trump's ascension to the helm of America once again has seen some international developments that people are saying were directly related. And one of those is the talks between Israel and Hamas. And they, for however long they couldn't get an agreement, Donald Trump coming back as U.S. president, all of a sudden, agreement in place. That's just one of many other things. But we need to take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll be opening the phone lines as well, allowing people to be a part of the conversation as we continue to look at some of what's taking place in the U.S. Our special guest, Mwala Henry, and we're talking about Donald Trump, U.S. president, U.S. politics.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's about 17 minutes before the top of the hour. Let's say hello to some of the people looking on at our Facebook page. That's Ivan. It's Ivan Tulsi. We say good morning to Melissa. Melissa's asking, what about recent asylum seekers? Well, I saw some of them crying on the news. Tony, condolences to Patsy. Keep sending your messages to our Facebook page. See who we have with us on the lines. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Satish. Morning to your guest, Princess Tom. Satish, in the context of Donald Trump at the helm now, and we're looking at migration, which is one of the big issues, well, globally, where there are crises all over the place and so on. I would like your guest to share how he thinks or what he thinks about the situation in Trinidad with these Venezuelans. Is it migration or invasion? Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for your call. Let's get your responses.
Well, interesting perspective. I haven't seen any statistics from the Trinidad-Tobago Police Service indicating that Trinidad's escalating criminality or murder specifically is directly related to illegal migration. Are there instances of migrant crime? And I'm using the same language that Donald Trump uses, right? Migrant crime? Definitely there have been evidence of that. Is there a direct correlation to the escalation? And that in itself has to requires further examination. I would have alluded to earlier in terms of the registration process would have been a national security initiative to know who's in the country. But to the caller's, you know, pointed question, is there an invasion? Are we speaking about an invasion of criminality from across the border? That in itself has to be borne out in terms of the stats. I know presently Donald Trump is making a direct correlation of the criminality he's experiencing in the U.S., he's making a direct correlation to Venezuela, where he basically says, if you say you guys are emptying your prisons and your crime, your criminals and insane asylums, and you're emptying them into our country. So he is going to be dealing with that quote-unquote invasion by returning them and reenacting his Remain in Mexico policy.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
A pleasant good morning once more, Satish, and to your guests, a pleasant good morning and welcome to the program. My
good
question
morning,
this morning is, well, I'll make this preamble first. Donald Trump, well, U.S. President Donald Trump, had mentioned that he wants to go after Greenland, the Panama Canal, and he wants to make Canada a U.S. state. Do you believe it was a brag? Or he's going after it, and how is he going to do that? Finally, the final part of that question is that, is he being supportive by the those in the U.S. with regard to those ambitions? I thank you.
Yes, yeah, so on all three points, when you talk about Greenland, Panama, and even Canada, I think Canada should be a separate issue, and I'll tell you why. If you examine Canada presently, their political system is moving vigorously towards a conservative politics with a snap election happening this year. And the present opposition leader, which is Pierre Poilievre, he has very similar policies with Donald Trump in terms of, you know, energy, economy, etc. So that in itself would have been a more political statement, or should we say tipping the scale of what's presently happening in Canada. So him and his bluster about making Canada a 51st state in itself is his usual Jokulian self. But when we look at Greenland and Panama, for him, it's really examining the national security threat to the U.S. So he's relooking the treaty that Carter would have signed with Panama, examining tariffs, examining fees, and the neutrality of the Panama Canal. So there's the evidence of China's presence. They presently have management control of two of the ports. So he is revisiting existing law to see if this influence is having a negative effect. And Greenland, obviously, when you're looking at the threats from Russia. So it's yet to be seen what type of treaty he's going to be revisiting and how that is going to impact his relationship with his ally.
Yeah, speaking of his relationship and America's relationship, I want to speak to you a bit about the U.S.'s relationship with the region. And Marco Rubio and some of the comments that he's been making about Cuba, about putting back the sanctions on Cuba and Venezuela in particular. Let's take this call first. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Morning, Tadish.
Call, I don't know if your volume is loud or what's going on, but we're getting some serious feedback.
Yeah, my radio is off.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, there's so much that we said about the last administration, Biden administration, was very harmful to the citizens of America. And then the biggest issue, I think, that was the economy and that open border that they had and criminals coming in left, right, and center. And, you know, the January 6th committee received a pardon yesterday at the 11th, literally the 11th hour. Now, if you didn't do anything wrong, why are you going to need a pardon for? Because it is alleged that they hid and they manufactured evidence, fabricated evidence against the J6 defendants. And I was real, you know, it was a kind of vindication that this woman who headed, who I think was one of the pivotal things of the J6 committee, received a pardon. Now, I don't know if it is legally binding in the U.S. Constitution, and this is what I want to ask the, your guest. Can someone receive a pardon if they have not been charged or convicted of a crime? Because I know that, I think it's Section 14 of the U.S. Constitution deals with pardon. I'm not too sure of the section, but are these pardons for crimes that have not been charged for or convicted be legally binding? Let's know if it.
Okay, thank you for your call. Let's get your response.
Yeah, excellent question. So it's what the law talks about, like a preemptive pardon. And, you know, Joe Biden applying pardons not just to the J6 committee, but he also extended pardons to his family, right? His brother, James Biden, his sister-in-law, Sarah Jones Biden, Valerie Biden, his brother-in-law. So there was a wide application of this pardon, and it was preemptive. So to your question, you know, there was no conviction. But if you look at Article 2, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution, it really gives wide remit to presidential pardon. So it isn't explicit in terms of preventing what is called preventative preemptive pardons. And the only way we could see if that's being challenged is by the interpretation of the Supreme Court. I don't see the present administration challenging it directly because Donald Trump would have admitted a similar position would have been positioned to him when he was a president in his first term. And by his legal advice, one of his advisors said if he takes preemptive pardon, either for himself or his children, it would have been an admission of guilt. And he desisted from taking that route.
Yeah, let's talk about how the Trump administration is going to be dealing with us here in the region. Venezuela, obviously, and of course we hear now that they're going to reimpose, or there's a call to reimpose the sanctions on Cuba that were lifted by Joe Biden in his final days as president. Aside from that, the U.S. Secretary of State, I think Marco Rubio is his name?
Yes, that's correct.
He's been making some strong, strong pronouncements on Venezuela and on everybody and everything associated with Venezuela. I mean, I listened to some of what he had to say and some of the reports. He's speaking about persons who are doing business with Venezuela, entities and companies, mm-hmm. and re-looking at the Chevron licenses and a number of different things that say...
And the relations and, of Iran, Iranian presence there, etc.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. And he's been making some very, very strong pronouncements which seem to have the full backing of Donald Trump as president of the United States. What does that mean? What do you think it means for us here in the region?
You know, when you point out the bluster and the hawkish position of Marco Rubio, who is presently nominee for Secretary of State. And I'll say up front, you know, that's his job as a Secretary of State, to have a very stark, sharp diplomatic position on the world stage. But there's a player that we are very much missing out of this picture, which is Bessent, who is the nominee for the Treasury, of the Secretary of the Treasury. And he's the one who holds the OFAC license and deals with commerce internationally. So what we will be seeing within the region is a tag team between these two powerhouses, both Rubio and Bessent, both business and energy. And one of the key things we need to be very clear of, energy is business. Energy is commerce. And Donald Trump would have given us a view into his position when it comes to energy. He says clearly from his own mouth, while he was signing executive orders from the Oval Office, he said there is no need for the U.S. to even be purchasing oil from Venezuela. So when you measure his position of oil production and energy production, there isn't any incentive for him to do any business with Venezuela directly. However, there is an incentive for other players and partners to do business with Venezuela. So I would borrow, you know, as we conclude, what position should we take? You know, I will borrow from India's top diplomat. I don't know if you know him, is Jaishankar. Mm. You know, he said something that was very, very important to me as I analyze, you know, business analytics and governing good decision and data-driven decision. He was the front row of Donald Trump's inauguration. He was not only in the front, but he was seated first in the front row. And he said this. He said, good partners, and I'm quoting him, he said, good partners provide choices. Smart partners take some of those choices. What was he saying? He was describing the relationship India has with the U.S. and India's relationship with Russia. The U.S. has a tumultuous relationship with Russia. But what India decided to do was not just be non-aligned, but all aligned. They maintained a friendly relationship with the U.S., but still maintained a friendly business relationship with Russia, getting cheap Russian oil and gas. And that's the same position that the Caribbean region, vis-a-vis CARICOM, more specifically Trinidad, where we must remain non-aligned, that this region must be maintained as a zone or an area of peace. Donald Trump is non-interventionist. And also all aligned, wherever there are advantageous positions that can benefit the region, that can benefit Trinidad, we must also leverage those relationships. And once that nexus does not interfere with U.S. trade initiatives, whereby our unique position is if we are able to leverage cross-border gas, we can bring that into the European market by weaning the region off of Russian gas. And that's where we can be able to find common ground and common agreement as we pursue energy security.
Well, we're out of time for our interview. It's been a really interesting one. And I'm sure that we're going to need to have a number of other discussions because things have only just started to unfold. And there's a saying that whenever America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. And there's going to be a lot of sneezing in America under the Trump administration, that's for sure. So we'll be discussing that. I want to thank you for being with us here this morning and giving us your insight into some of these matters.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.